Hey, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.net, movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm very excited, one day after hashtag National Best Friends Day, to be talking on F This Movie with my best friend, Doug.
Is there an unofficial podcast of FThisMovie.net? Because if so, I want to listen to it.
Have you heard of F This Movie Nights? It's an unauthorized spinoff.
Unauthorized?
We're pursuing litigation to shut that thing down, man.
But half of the cast of F This Movie participates in F This Movie Nights.
No. Listen, I heard them on the show, and their voices were unmistakable.
Right.
How are you, Doug?
I'm doing really well. You're shot out of a cannon, sir, and I'm very happy to be on the show, so thank you.
You know for a fact that 30 seconds ago we were talking offline and I was a different person.
That's right, Patrick.
I'm putting on my douchebag radio voice.
Here's Patrick 45 seconds ago.
Yeah.
I guess I'll just press record now.
Is that cool? Wait, that's like talking into a mirror. I'm ready to be on F This Movie Nights, I think.
Oh, hey, this is Patrick. I'm going to press record now. Hey, everybody, I'm Patrick Rowley.
F This Movie. Hey, if this is your first time listening to the show, welcome.
F This Movie.
And you can find our website at fthismovie.net. I'll save all the other stuff for the end of the show. Ooh. This is one of those episodes where we're just going to talk about whatever we want, the little skits and bits, the crazy make-em-ups, and happy June-sploitation, everyone. We are recording this on June 9th, so we are 9 days into June-sploitation. Today is Revenge Day.
What should I watch tonight?
Oh my gosh, there's so many things you could watch tonight.
Yes, tell me. I mean, name all of them.
Check out Netflix This Movie for some recommendations. You've already seen Blue Ruin, right?
Schooled by the site. Yes, I have. It's good.
Somebody watched it today in the comments, and I thought, wow, that's a good pick.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you seen Ninja 3 The Domination?
Probably one late night slumber party with all the boys.
Yeah, Lucinda Dickey pours V8 on her chest and lets someone lick it off. And it's like, I have never wanted V8 ever in my life because it's like weird tomato vegetable juice. But in this case, I would make an exception.
Let me introduce you to V8 Splash. It's like a new twist on an old classic. It's like Clamato juice.
My voice is going a little bit.
Ooh, mine too.
So if you're confused and you're like, when did Demi Moore come on F This Movie? That's just me, guys.
Is that G.I. Patrick?
Yeah. No, that's just me. I'm the juror.
You're About Last Night,
which is a movie that she made and exists, I'm fairly certain. I can't confirm. I never saw it.
Is it a rural juror?
Rural juror. So June-sploitation, I gotta say, is going really, really well this year, and obviously we have all of you nice people to thank who have been so excited, who have been tweeting about it, who have been watching tons of movies, commenting, having discussions under each day's theme. Like, again, this just started 2 years ago. It was kind of a slow build up. Last year was kind of the year we said, oh yeah, it's fun and people seem to like it, so we'll keep it around. And this year it's gonna rival Scary Movie Month. I mean, it really has become like a real institution in like a really fun way.
It's really impressive. I feel like 2 years ago this concept's been around for a couple years or 3 years or I think maybe this is the
This is the third June-sploitation.
Third June-sploitation. Before that was 30 Stars of Summer, which is a similar thing, just different kind of angle.
And a massive success in its own right. Let's not sell that thing short. Remember the day we all watched a Whoopi Goldberg movie? Remember that day?
Hey, listen, there's always room for watching movies.
I watched the one where she coaches a basketball team.
By the way, I just said there's always room for watching a movie. And I am like,
that's our new little tagline on the site. F This Movie. There's always room for watching a movie.
Movie podcast. Like, there's always room for watching a movie. But no, the point is, I think any sort of contest or event or activity or promotion that encourages people to watch movies, that's what I'm in favor of. That's why I say 30 Stars of Summer. Yeah, maybe it's the different angle. It's about, maybe not an actor, actress, whatever, you might not be interested in their body of work. But this, I feel like June-sploitation, and we've talked about this before in terms of we come from different perspectives. We come from different perspectives a little bit. You really stick to the exploitation sort of angle of Junesploitation, which is kind of the basis and the foundation of the entire month, which is great.
To be fair, I would also be watching those movies in July and August.
But I come from, like, you know, for example, I remember last year's or 2 years ago's first day was Cars. And I think I watched a Senna, the IndyCar documentary. And this year for Cops, I watched Super Troopers. These are not exploitation films. It's just an excuse to watch something that's maybe been on my shelf for a long time that I haven't had a chance to watch. And I think I'm really grateful, honestly, because it's like it's forcing me to do it. Kind of like when you have a project for yourself and you make yourself a deadline, you get it done. And I feel like this does that for me, at least. It's like, otherwise I'd just be like, yeah, I could watch that tonight, or I could just easily watch something on Netflix and just, you know, whatever, just rot on the sofa, as opposed to actually actively watching something that I will enrich my filmic knowledge.
And I want to reiterate something that you're saying there, because I think there are some people.
This part?
Yeah. It was the part where you barfed all over the microphone. I think there are a lot of people maybe who kind of sit out Junesploitation, and that's fine. But I think it's like, well, these kinds of movies aren't for me. Sure. And I know we have people that sit out Scary Movie Month because they don't like horror movies. And then we have other people who like really just show up for Scary Movie Month because they love horror movies so much. And so I just want to reiterate, you know, if you are somebody who listens to the podcast who maybe hasn't been on the site that much, or who listens to the podcast, been on the site and has said like, yeah, but I'm not into these kinds of movies. You know, participate, watch Super Troopers, watch Senna, the documentary, like find a movie that tangentially relates to
the
day's theme.
They're so broad that
there are days. I mean, like zombies, you're probably not going to find a zombie movie if you're not into horror films. You know, I mean, you could watch Shaun of the Dead. That's a comedy. You could watch, like, what's that one where the
White Zombie.
I can't remember. It's like a love story. It just came out like 2 years ago. Holt and Teresa Palmer.
It's called Still Breathing.
It's making me crazy that I can't think of the name of it.
Daybreakers.
That's it. So, like, Cannibals.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, right? This is pissing me off. Like Cannibal Day, you're probably going to have a hard time finding a cannibal movie that isn't sort of a proper exploitation movie. And that's...
I would argue that the Blaxploitation Day, I mean, obviously that is so specific and so exploitation focused that, yeah.
Yeah, right? So there are going to be warm bodies. Warm bodies.
I gave you a break so you can fucking go on your iPhone and find Warm Bodies is what I was going to say.
Warm Bodies. So watch Warm Bodies or an episode of iZombie on the CW. But, you know, try to participate. It doesn't have to be every day. It could be just a few days, but it's really fun. And if you are somebody who's into more offbeat or exploitation movies, it's a ton of fun because you won't believe some of the movies that our listeners and our readers find and dig up and write about. And I read their descriptions and I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to watch that, you know?
Right. Absolutely.
And so many of you guys get really into the spirit of the thing. And so it's just been really, really fun and successful so far. So thank you to everybody who has participated. Really, it's super awesome.
It's been really awesome. And I've also noticed that what I'm impressed by, and I know that given the time zones, and there's obviously fans of this movie in Australia and England and Canada and all over the world, that people can start, you know, I mean, obviously the rules are pretty loose, but you know, we try to, you know, like start at midnight for the next day, stuff like that. But people are posting at, you know, right when the post is long. I don't know what time of the morning you post the day's post. That doesn't make sense.
I think it posts at midnight your time.
Okay.
3 a.m. East Coast time.
Okay. But it seems like right away people are posting their reviews. Like they're staying up and doing this and they're watching not just one movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I do it maybe once or twice during the month. I just can't otherwise do it. I don't know what it is about me. I'm a loser is my point. But these people are watching two or three. And it's really impressive. I usually try and do it the first day. I'm so excited about Junesploitation. I usually watch two. And then it progressively dies off and I die a little inside every day.
We're going to come back to talking about this idea of like not being in exploitation movies or not being in certain movies and what that means for the site. I want to come back to that in just a minute. But first, Douglas.
Wow.
I want to ask you.
Holy.
Have you seen anything good lately?
Moly. I've only watched stuff for Junesploitation.
Sure.
So. Yes.
Let's have it.
I don't know if you want me to list that. I mean, if that's the nature.
We could talk about it. I mean, I know you've commented under the things, but you could speak a little more in depth about Super Troopers. People want to know, what does Doug think of this movie that's 15 years old?
What does L.A. Doug think about Super Troopers? Right. I mean, honestly, my wife loves it, and I never saw it, and I watched it, and it's really funny in parts, and, you know, some other parts not so funny, but hey.
I haven't seen it since the theater. Like, I know it's one of these cult movies that people adore, right. And I've seen several other Broken Lizard movies, and haven't been crazy about them either.
How many Broken Lizard movies are there? I can think of two.
I lost Club Dread track. Club Dread Beer Fest.
Oh, they're okay.
There's one where they all work at a restaurant called the Slammin' Salmon. That's a thing. And I don't remember. I feel like there's one major one that I might be forgetting. And if there is, I haven't seen it. But I've seen all the other ones.
Club Dread, there are two good scenes. One of them is where the guy mispronounces Penelope.
Penelope.
And the other is where a girl does some acrobatics in a bedroom.
Sure.
Jordan Ladd of Cabin Fever.
So I haven't seen Super Troopers since the day it came out. But I feel like within the last year, I got an email to the podcast about, like, hey, do you want to interview the woman who, like, gets naked, like,
the German chick?
Yeah. Oh, and I don't remember why they wanted me to interview her, and I couldn't really think of an angle to talk about.
I think of a couple, but
next time I'm going to pass that off to you.
This is more of a Doug Schultz interview.
I think it was like, because they had just kickstarted the sequel, and they raised a crazy amount of money in like a short amount of time, and I think the angle, it wasn't from the woman, it was like from her representation,
from the dude,
right? And it was like that she was kind of being cut out of the sequel, and fans wanted her in, and so do you want to have her on the podcast? And
listen, it's I feel like Super Troopers is such a movie of the moment, meaning there are some really genuinely funny parts. And there's some other sequences that just are kind of meandering and go on, you know, that don't really have any jokes. But I feel like if you were a college kid, I think I wrote this, if you were a college kid in 2001 or 2002, whenever it came out, or whenever it came out on DVD in the early 2000s, like, this had to be playing on every television in every dorm across the country, because it's so ridiculous, like making fun of cops and lots of drug humor, nudity, ridiculous, you know, a fat man gets naked, you know, it's got all the things that college kids love, and some things hold up and some things don't. And I feel really bad for the fat guy who got naked, because it's just like, I look at the scene, I'm like, well, that's an interesting, and he's one of the co-writers of the movie, I think. I forget his name right now, but
Kevin Heffernan.
Yeah. He co-wrote the movie and is integral in, I think, Broken Lizard's successes. But it's just a very odd, like, this is not flat. It's not, it's funny, I guess, in that we're laughing at you, but I don't know. I was kind of was amused by that. Like, why, like, the nudity as humor. To me, it seems kind of weird, but I don't know. I like nudity for one thing and one thing only.
I definitely went into it. Kind of,
I usually cry.
Well, of course I went into it definitely hoping that it was Billy Madison, you know.
Oh, sure.
We've talked before either on the podcast or in a column that we saw Billy Madison, and I think I actually saw it and then showed it to you on VHS. And we were always looking for Chasing That Dragon, a movie where it's just like you have no expectations and you realize, like, oh, they really got away with something here, because this movie is demented and really funny. And I can name a few that are like that. And Super Troopers is about half that, I would say, at least my memory of it. It may be way funnier than I remember, because we all know I was wrong about Not Another Teen Movie.
I don't know if it's way funnier. There's funny parts, to be sure, but it's not like I a couple times I laughed out loud, and I watched it with my wife, who I said was a college kid in the early 2000s, and I think that's why she has the fondness for it. And she also really likes Beer Fest, by the way. Like, no joke, she likes
Which Beer I also Fest. Have seen and don't remember.
I get them so confused. I get the Beer League with Artie Lang mixed with Beer Fest. I think Beer Fest is the one with, like, the German girl and the dirndl, and Beer League is about, like, a baseball or softball league.
I just like you saying dirndl.
Dirndl. Dirndl Schultz is my daughter's name. I don't know. I don't ever want to go back to Club Dread, just because I remember, like, not laughing at all during that.
And again, there's people that love that movie too, so.
Yeah, well. Anyway,
The world is a rainbow.
Super Troopers, not great. I mean, Super Troopers, fine. Not... That came out wrong. Super Troopers, great. Not the funniest movie I've ever seen is my point, which what is the funniest movie I've ever seen? I don't know. Selma? I think Selma is the funniest movie I've ever seen.
What else have you seen besides Super Troopers?
Zombies Day, I saw two movies. I saw Day of the Dead, Romero's Day of the Dead, and I saw White Zombie. Day of the Dead's great. I've never seen that before. I've seen Dawn of the Dead a couple, maybe three times.
Which you love.
I like it. I do like Dawn of the Dead. I don't necessarily subscribe to it being like the best zombie movie or the best horror movie or Romero's best movie, but I think it's great. And for what I think I maybe touched on this in a column a long time ago, but it's weird because a movie that I've Dawn of the Dead, there's things when I first saw it that I really was like, I don't like this, is I'm arm's length, you know, it's something about this just doesn't jive with me. And yet for whatever reason, I find myself going back to it even more than I would go back to movies that I would say are better than Dawn of the Dead. So that I don't
just
know.
Just like
that
me
means.
With Waterworld.
That's going to come out like a podcast 3 years from now. Like, I fucking love Dawn of the Dead. But it's one of those things. And it's, you know, if you're a psychologist out there, you probably, you know, I'm sure it is that. I'm sure it's that there's a lot more to it. There's a lot of meat to it, as opposed to like my personal favorite, Night of the Living Dead, which is a very superficial movie. I mean, not in a bad way. It's just, it is what it is. It's face value. Zombie, people are trapped in a house and zombies are coming. I still think it's horrifying. I still think it's got some interesting kind of cultural societal implications and some commentary on that. But Dawn of the Dead obviously is a lot more going on, and some things still don't jive with me. I'll make fun of the orange blood until the day I die, and the zombie pie fight, but I'll go back to it. Day of the Dead is a lot more kind of face value. There's definitely some interesting social commentary in it, but it's not as deep. Some of it is kind of jingoistic and a little comical, especially in 2015, watching the guy with the bandolero bullets on his chest and just kind of, scientists, fuck you nerds, you know, and the scientists being like, you need us to cure the zombies. But it's great. It's really fun. And White Zombie is not a movie. That is like, it's just long takes of Lugosi's eyes. And, you know, I get it's 1935, I think, 38. I'm not sure of the year. And I think that back then when there's a gimmick or a trick here, I'll say this. Back when I was in college, I took a class where I had to use PowerPoint. It was the first time I ever used Microsoft PowerPoint. And the point of it was like at the end of the class, you had to do a presentation. And I found in PowerPoint that you can do all these sound effects and all these like cool wipes where the letters appear on screen and stuff. And I put a fucking sound effect and wipe between every frame. And there's only like 10 different, you know, stills. And by the third one, watching the audiences react, I'm like, this was a huge mistake. Like the gimmick wears off so quickly. And I feel like with so many movies of any generation, whenever they find a new gimmick, be it the zoom in dolly out from the, you know, 60s and 70s when they first kind of discovered that, or like the bullet time from the Matrix, it's like as soon as they find that and they focus too much on that, it's like it instantly dates it, and it instantly makes it like, you know, I can't really go back to it as easily. I don't know much about White Zombie. I know it's the first zombie movie ever. It has a lot to do with like Haiti and voodoo and all that stuff. I really zoned out during it because it's pretty boring. I know a lot of classic film fans will flame me for that, and that's fine. It's not for me. That's, you know, I stand by that. But I do feel like they're focusing on some of the gimmicks and some of the wipes and some of the dissolves that were so new at the time, I have to assume, that I'm like, well, there's not much of a story here, but there is a lot of cool special effects if you're born during the Depression.
So you didn't love it. You hated it. I just want to say real quick, your PowerPoint.
Of Port-au-Prince, I did.
your PowerPoint tangent. I just want to call attention to the fact that when Douglas Cobb married our friend Jason and myself,
the best PowerPoint
in creating, in hosting his bachelor party, created a PowerPoint for him that took us hours because everything that appeared in the PowerPoint, like,
oh no, it was perfect.
Had every, a sound every, effect and every an, race an animation.
And record scratch, and everything was absolutely perfect for that. It's more like when you're doing some quantitative reasoning class and you have to present stills, and I'm being funny because I'm the joker in the class, so Doug's going to have a race car sound effect, and it's like, fuck, this is, you know, like a lead balloon. But for my bachelor party, when you showed all the chicks I banged, and then the
it was a really short PowerPoint. You burnt! Let's have our first fight on the podcast.
I can't get mad at you.
Speaking of which, I have to say hi to my brother. I found out that after 5 years of being on the internet, I guess I was going to say on the air, but on the internet, my brother is now a fan of F This Movie. So hi, Chris.
Welcome, Chris.
Thanks for taking me to see Willow and Beetlejuice and Monster Squad.
Thank you for never taking me to any movie.
Yeah, what's up with that, by the way?
That's an open invitation. If you want to come to California and take me out to something, I'll consider it. I'll go with you.
And anything else you want to talk about?
I saw Forbidden Planet. That's great.
Okay, and Francis, go ahead.
I saw Big Ass Spider, which I know you've talked about a lot on the site and probably in podcasts. That movie, I just want to say it's so much of it is great.
Yeah, especially the opening sequence.
Right, the opening sequence. I like the main character, Mike Mendez. Is that his name?
Yeah,
he's a capable. He's a good. You know, like working with zero budget and a lot of ambition and a lot of ideas. He made a really interesting movie. I feel like there's something about a lot of movies, not just low budget movies, not just exploitation movies, not just like, you know, kind of sci-fi channel esque movies, that when they get to the point where they have to track down, like, we need a climax, and they have to go through this procedural, like, all the jokes stop. The CGI got kind of really bad because, again, when this movie is so super cheap, that it's the CGI works best in bits and pieces and in the backgrounds of things. When you're having a giant duel with this enormous spider, you know, tackling a building, it doesn't quite, a little disconnect. I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of movies out there that as soon as it gets to that procedural level, all the fun kind of goes out the window and I'm just waiting for it to be like to wrap up, you know? Yeah. And I feel a little unfair saying that because I want to support these smaller projects, but at the same time, it's like, man, you got to make the third act as strong as the first two and as clever and funny and, like, you know, irreverent or whatever. Because I feel like, again, I kind of zoned when, like, it's like destruction and whatever.
Yeah. Again, I mean, we should applaud, obviously, the movie for being as good as it is. And that was one of those situations where I think it was supposed to just be kind of a terrible sci-fi movie, and he kind of
like Sharknado or something
stepped in. Yeah, it was just called like Mega Spider or something like that, and he kind of stepped in and figured out like, oh, here's what the tone should be, and fought to have it called Big Ass Spider so that you knew right away what movie you were seeing.
Right.
And does a good job with it. Yeah, like you said, it doesn't all work and it kind of wears out its welcome a little bit. And I fear well, that's not fair. My concern was like he was going to now just be labeled as that guy, because I know then he made another movie that's coming out called like Lava Spiders, and then that became Lava Lantula or something, and Steve Guttenberg is in it and Michael Winslow. So I was like, oh no, don't just make him this filmmaker, but he's already working on something else with Dolph Lundgren and Henry Rollins. So he's going to be just fine. Like, I'm not really worried about that, but that is
he's
a
still
fun
making movies no matter what. I mean, that's pretty rare.
Yeah. Right. And that is a fun movie.
It is. And again, I just, not to repeat myself, but I feel like a lot of the third act stuff is just, it kind of loses that. You say it wore out its welcome, and I think that's a little true, but it's like it could have easily kept its welcome by just keeping the jokes and the stuff and not just going through the beats. You know, right. I feel like so much of people refer to screenwriting books or whatever, like, well, I need this and I need this and I need this. But I'm like, I don't know, in 2015, when a lot of stuff's been done, maybe flip the script a little, the second time I've said that on the show.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw Big Trouble in Little China for
all
80s
right. Action
Day. Oh, I want to talk about that a little bit.
Okay.
Well, what's your opinion on Big Trouble in Little China?
Well, one of these days we're going to do a whole podcast on Big Trouble in Little China.
Okay.
Let's skip it.
Then never mind.
I do think there's a lot to talk about. I mean, people love it very, very, very much. And I like it a lot. I don't have the love for it, the kind of obsession for it as some others do. I love the Kurt Russell performance. I love the idea that he's basically the sidekick who thinks he's the leading man. I love the fact that it is such a weird movie that somehow John Carpenter made the most uncommercial action comedy possible and got it through a studio system and put it in theaters. I mean, it was a cult movie like from the second it hit screens, basically. So there's so much about it that I love that I don't ever really want to take shots at it. But I also don't love it as much as its biggest fans.
It it's a movie I saw a lot as a kid, and I think that on if I had friends over or if I visited, you know, like we'd go to Video Plus Emporium and rent a bunch of really based on the video box cover, you know, it's an action movie. It's a, you know, it's got guns. It's about war. It's about, you know, this was a goofy, I think the cover is just him standing there like with a smirk on his face and like electricity in the background and stuff. It's a pretty great cover. And of course, if you're 13 or 12, it's like, I'm going to rent this. And I watched it a bunch of times. And I think that I remember watching it the other night and knowing in my head, I'm like, this is why I liked it when I was a kid. Like the practical effect where there's this like this pig creature, or some of the lightning bolt stuff and some of the action sequences are pretty well done. And I really, my memory of the movie was so strong. And I remember buying it when it first came out on DVD. I've got this double disc DVD that I don't think I've ever explored. And I remember having such a fond feeling for it. And watching it the other night, I was just kind of like, oh, this is, it's, again, everything you said is true. And so much of it, like, you love all the individual elements. Like, the Kurt Russell's great in almost everything. John Carpenter back then was awesome. You know, he made a lot of great movies. And a lot of it just doesn't quite gel, again, for me. And it's, I think it's kind of confusing. I think it's just all over the place. I mean, it's confusing maybe on purpose. It's just kind of, are you okay?
I'm all right. Sorry.
It just fell over.
I fainted. It's no big deal.
Is my description of Big Trouble in Little China that boring?
It's bringing up difficult memories for me.
Anyway, I just, it was interesting because I wanted to capture that again, trying to keep my reviews as short and succinct as possible. I wrote something like, you know, 36-year-old Doug is disappointed in younger Doug because it's got a really strong opening. It's got a pretty climactic finish, which I enjoyed watching.
Which and you yourself there's... have.
And that's got this whole middle part that just is like, I don't know really. I mean, it's confusing. It's just, it's muddled. It's just, you know, it's all, whatever. And there was a commenter, and I'm so glad that this person, be he a boy or she a girl, I don't think they've been with the site for too long, and I hope they stick with it after Junesploitation. I hope it's not just a Junesploitation commenter. If they do stick around just for Junesploitation, great. But again, please, everyone out there, stick around for we got so much more coming up. They just put an emoticon in there of a frowning face, like, how dare you shit on this movie that is beloved. And it was an interesting thread because some other people chimed in like, yeah, you know, it's not my favorite either. And then he put an even a stronger emoticon like, fuck you. And then he's like, you should be ashamed for not loving this movie. And it
I think he or she was looking for the emoticon of like the dude who just inflates and blows the steam out of his nose and then explodes into garbage. Which was like the thing I could never quite wrap my head around as a kid. Like so much of the movie had its own logic. And I was like, yeah, that makes sense. But that was so left field that I still to this day I'm like that.
But even that for me, like what I was saying before, is that was probably the thing that got me to stick around. That I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah,
like,
right.
A person explodes. Like that's hilarious and awesome. So let's watch Hamburger Hill next. And then fall asleep
starring
and wake up.
Starring Steven Weber.
But it was interesting just because I do think nostalgia plays. We've talked about nostalgia a billion times on this website, and I think it's such an interesting thing that we'll never figure out and never crack the code, but I will talk about nostalgia forever because it really does inform so many opinions, and it really does kind of put you in certain camps, and there's so much that is undetachable that you can't separate from my love for Goonies, perhaps, that I can't see the forest for the trees. And I used to think Big Trouble in Little China was that also, that I would just watch the movie and just love it still, decades later, and it really didn't hold up. And I'm like, well, my nostalgia wasn't that strong for it, I guess. Yeah. And I don't want to accuse anyone of saying that their nostalgia is coloring their opinion, but I'd love to have a conversation again if we have a podcast later or if you record it with someone else. I'd love to listen to it because I want to know why it still is just beloved so much beyond the 12-year-old sort of like, this is cool.
Right. Yeah, it's a movie that's been requested to have an episode on more than once. So one of these days, I promise, we will actually get around to doing it. Yeah. And you mentioned the Goonies in passing, and so we should just mention that Mary Ellen Trainor died this
week.
Yeah,
I saw that.
The mom in the Goonies, the mom in the Monster Squad, the psychologist in all four Lethal Weapon movies. She's in the first Die Hard. She plays Kathleen Turner's sister in Romancing the Stone.
She was in everything that a name maybe you didn't recognize. And if I saw a headline that said, you know, Mary Ellen Trainor died, I wouldn't necessarily know who it was until you see her picture. It's instantly recognizable.
Yeah, well, she was married to Robert Zemeckis for a time, I believe. And so she showed up in a lot of Zemeckis stuff. So she's in like that great Tales from the Crypt episode, the remake of All Through the House with Larry Drake, who you all know as Dr. Giggles, as the killer Santa. She's just, I mean, she was such a part of like my childhood. It was, she was that lady. And yeah, so that's very sad. She was in her early 60s. And
yeah,
that's
62.
Too
that's
young
it. That's
to go. So
way
that's,
too young.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
She's even in Action Jackson. I have a couple things that I'll talk about. Some maybe that I watched for Junesploitation, some things that I haven't. I had opportunity to see The Nightmare. Are you familiar with this movie?
No.
This is the new documentary from Rodney Asher, who made Room 237, a movie that is not beloved around F this movie. And I honestly,
that's a documentary about The Shining, right?
Yeah. And I still have not seen the whole thing, honestly. But I know there are several people on this site, Adam Risky and JB among them, who are not fans of that movie. So his new movie is called The Nightmare. It is also a documentary. It's about sleep paralysis, where you're sleeping and you wake up, but your body can't move and you start to see really scary shit and you can't do anything and you're positive that you're going to die. Oh. And so it's interviews with these people who suffer from it, as well as kind of reenactments of what the hallucinations are like. So there's little pieces of it. I mean, it kind of reminded me of like an Errol Morris movie where it's this mix of kind of fictional reenactments and talking head documentary. And the reenactments are interesting and like they're well staged. You know, he knows how to shoot stuff. Like it's a good looking documentary and in the context of a horror movie might be really scary. They're not scary in this movie. I mean, except if you were to like kind of take a step back and say, well, if it was the middle of the night and I woke up and I saw that, I would be terrified. So I can be frightened through empathy, but like not watching the movie because you know that it's a weird reenactment of someone describing a hallucination. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
there's not that extra level of the removed from reality where you can kind of lose yourself in this story that's going on. So it's a weird experience to watch it. I found it a little bit repetitive. I mean, I didn't love the movie, honestly. I thought it was interesting, and I thought the approach was kind of interesting, but the movie overall left me cold.
It sounds horrifying. I mean, I've heard about that before, too. No,
the actual thing, not the movie.
And that's what's interesting, right? The movie sounds, you know, I don't know, like I can't imagine watching a movie about something that... whatever. But the actual thing sounds horrifying, and I would so see that. I could so easily see that becoming, you know, next year's sort of Insidious 3 or whatever, you know, like the kind of right. horror movie that appeals to high school kids, you know, and oh my God, you're waking up, but you're awake, but you can't move. And it's
it's certainly an interesting approach in terms of exploring this idea of sleep paralysis, because if you've never had it, you don't really understand what it is. And so I think actually the way that he chooses to stage it is interesting because it kind of brings you into the mindset and shows you like, well, this is what it is. This is what you would be seeing. And you're like, oh yeah, that would be super scary, you know? And so it's also,
thank God I don't have that.
Yeah, it's right. Not. Exactly.
Power off.
Man, I sleep like a baby. And so it's also interesting in terms of like, well, here's what's scary in real life, but we're showing it in a movie. And so it's not scary, even though there are movies that show this same thing that are scary. It played games with my head, but I didn't love the movie, so go
I feel
figure.
Like you're going to go back and watch that movie a ton in the future. I like this movie, and you're going to like every October, like, I got to watch Nightmare.
I'll be honest, I don't think I ever will see it again. And that's not a knock, you know. But
unless I play it while you're sleeping.
Because I watched We Are Still Here the other night, and I reviewed it at ifthismovie.net. And honestly, as I was watching it, I was having just a few issues with it. Some of the acting, I was like, I don't know. And some of the shots, at times it felt almost, and this is totally unfair, there were just some moments where I was like, this feels a little bit like a student film, because so much of it is so far removed from that. It's actually really kind of accomplished and good. There were just those moments that were pulling me out of it. And then every day since, I've only wanted to watch that movie again, and I'm mad that I rented it on iTunes instead of just went ahead and bought it, because I don't want to rent it again. So now I have to wait for the Blu-ray, because I really should have just gone ahead and bought it for like the extra $4 or $5 and then still got the Blu-ray, because I could be watching it right now.
Because the other day we had friends who have a daughter that's the same age as our daughter, and they're like, oh, our daughter is starting to watch movies, as is our daughter. And they told us our daughter loves Madagascar.
We are still here. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Our daughter loves Selma. Our daughter loves Madagascar. You should watch Madagascar. It's got animals. It's fun. And our daughter has not seen it, and I have never seen it before. And our daughter, her favorite movie is Finding Nemo, and that's a great, great first choice. And my daughter is a brilliant genius. So I blind bought Madagascar. I was like, yeah, whatever, like $4 rental or $14 purchase. Let's just buy it, you know, through Amazon Prime or something. And not only is it just, it's fine. It's not a bad movie.
It's just background noise, though, unfortunately.
It really is. Yeah. Aside from like the few times my daughter said, like, I like to move it, which is adorable. And you should really see her. She's so precious.
Now she's ready to be a chef at Rock Monkey. That's a joke for only Doug, everyone. Sorry you didn't know us in 1998 on Valentine's Day.
You wish you knew us in... So it's also deals with like there's like human skulls and dead people parachuting, and it's just like I don't want to have to explain this to my daughter. Thankfully, she didn't care that much to ask or whatever. She was kind of tuned out too. But it was one of those things. I'm just saying, be careful what you wish for, because if you bought everything, you'd end up with like 10 Madagascars.
Yeah, no, I'm not big on blind buying, and honestly, the only reason that I even considered blind buying this one was A, it had some good word of mouth. And B, it was produced by Travis Stevens, and I've talked before on the podcast about Travis Stevens and how he has yet to make a bad movie. You know, as much as the producer makes a movie, he has yet to have his name attached to a bad movie. Every time I see something that he's involved with, it's really great. He produced Big Ass Spider, among other movies. And so I was like, well, I should probably just take a chance and buy this thing that Travis Stevens helped make. But I didn't, and now I wish I would have, because I really want to watch it again.
I don't want to spoil. You could still buy it.
I know. But then I'm mad because then I'm buying it three times: once to rent, once to buy on iTunes, once to buy the Blu-ray, and that I won't do.
Why stop there? Once on DVD, just the regular DVD. Once on Laserdisc, the bootleg in New York.
Yeah, you can buy. VHS is making a comeback. Once.
I get off, like, I'm a hipster. I get off on like the hiss of VHS tapes. Like, it's just the raw.
Let me tell you something. I recently bought the first VHS I've bought in 20 years.
What? Okay.
For Canon Day, I found out that there was this Canon movie that I'd never seen called Undercover, and Jennifer Jason Leigh is in it. And I was like, ooh. Canon, Jennifer Jason Leigh, I'm in. It's basically 21 Jump Street, but, you know, kind of serious. And couldn't find it, even on YouTube. I know that's kind of frowned upon, but sometimes when it's a movie that is out of circulation, I do check YouTube, because a lot of times the movies end up there. Not on YouTube. The only way I could get it was on a VHS, and it was like $6 off of Amazon. So I ordered it, had to reconnect my VCR down in the theater here, and put it on just to check the quality. I mean, it's like, you know, it's a 30-year-old videotape, and it's not great. And I'm having to like ride the tracking over and over. And it's like, I don't miss this. Blu-ray is awesome. What is this bullshit? It's never been on DVD. It's never. So the only way I can watch it on Canon Day is via this VHS. But such is my commitment to Junesploitation.
Here's the interesting thing about Blu-ray and HD stuff. It's unassailably awesome. There's undeniably, it's a huge leap forward. I would never go back to standard def. Even watching, like, we have our, you know, 100 or so channels on our cable. And if there's like the two options, like the standard def, or it's like, why I don't even want the option of standard def. Like, I don't care. Everything HD.
Ask my wife about that. She only watches stuff in standard def. I'm like, you know, we get this in HD. Also, you could be seeing The Bachelorette in high def.
Does she not realize that they like, I think she's like one channel that it's,
well, it's not, it's not, it's not just a one channel separation on our cable system. Like, you have to add 1,000 to everything. It was harder when we had Comcast, cause you had to memorize different channels. Here it's just like, if it's 7, we have UVerse. Here it's like, if it's 7, then it's 1,007, you know?
Gotcha, 7,001.
What? She forgets and just watches stuff in standard def, which, whatever, that's fine.
I will say, though, I was watching Big Ass Spider. I keep going back to Big Ass Spider. The movie definitely feels like, and it's meant to be like a throwback exploitation-y type film. There was a couple moments on Netflix where our Wi-Fi has just been so crappy lately that it would drop to the standard def or even below standard def.
What's below standard?
I don't even
substandard
know. Substandard def? And it got to a point where just it was very kind of blurry. And actually, it enhanced the little, like, I'm like, this, because when it was so crisp and so clear, you could tell it's shot on video and it's like a little, like, brightly lit, obviously, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know. But if there's something to the standard def. And I think, you know, a long time ago, there was, you asked a question on the weekend weigh-in where you said, obviously, watching stuff in the theater is the best. Is there ever a situation where the intimacy of watching something in your living room trumps that of going to a theater and watching it? And by and large, everyone said, no, you're fucking crazy, Patrick. I can't believe you run a film website.
We lost
I want my
so
money
many
back.
Readers that day. I remember.
They wanted their money back.
Yeah.
And
the
your
great
point
exodus of 2013.
You had seen Night of the Living Dead at the Music Box.
Correct. No.
And
but go on.
You had just seen it for the first time.
It wasn't at the Music Box, but yes, it was Night of the Living Dead.
Dude. And you were just kind of like, huh, this maybe works better when you're like intimate, like in a more intimate setting.
Yeah, like
and it's an interesting question.
Lap.
Right. A hole in the bottom of the popcorn. I got you. My point was, in some situations, in some instances, like, do I want to see coffee at standard or at the highest def possible? Absolutely, because there's many reasons to want to see coffee with
oh my
crisp
God.
Resolution. But with some other movies, like some grimy, gritty, whatever, especially a movie like Big Ass Spider, which, again, I mentioned that some of the CGI is great in the early scenes, and that just, it, weirdly enough, it seems like they got, like, they ran out of money or something, and some of the CGI is so bad.
Yeah, I don't mean to interrupt. I believe I've heard Mike Mendez talk about, I think they went back and added that first sequence kind of as a way to grab you. Like, they got some extra money, went back specifically and did that first scene, which is why it almost feels like its own short film. Like, this stands apart from the rest of the movie.
There's even some stuff after that, though, with like the smallish spider. Cause it's like, again, it's in a dark basement. It's more of like in the shadows in the background. But when it's like a giant spider running through the park.
Please,
in,
you know, a big ass spider.
In the middle of the day.
But that's when we see Lloyd Kaufman, right?
Yeah, for sure, when he gets eaten. but spoiler, sorry. It almost worked a little better when the standard def became standard.
Right.
And I was like, well, this feels like something from the 70s. And I kind of liked it, the feeling it gave me.
Yeah.
Now, the second thing I was going to say is I don't even own a VCR. I don't even know how to own anything. How do you own something? How do you buy things with money? I've gone to Amazon and looked for a VCR because I've got literally two banker's boxes full of VHS
porn
tapes. Well, yeah, but they're not mutually exclusive. They're on VHS. Girls have gone wild on VHS. And I'm like, I want to buy a VCR because I don't have a VCR. And I went on Amazon. And you can't even buy a cheap VCR anymore
for
because
real?
Now the market's so weirdly skewed where the only VCR you can buy is over, I want to say, $200. So if anyone – this is a serious question. If anyone out there can recommend a great VCR, and even for my purposes, I might want to – I have a lot of old like home movies of like shows and like
porn.
Rock concerts and porn and homemade rock concerts that I want to convert to like burn on a DVD or dump right into my computer. If anyone out there can recommend that for me.
Try eBay. Try flea markets. I mean, there's, I'm sure, lots of.
Or should I just maybe put out my call again to the audience that's listening? Please.
Yeah,
help
no,
me.
Sorry.
Don't listen to Patrick. eBay.
Make things even easier for Doug, everyone.
Thank you.
The other night, I rewatched Class of 1984. The classic from Scream Factory. That was one of the few days where I did two movies in one day. And I didn't post about it, actually. I probably should have. But I posted for my first Scream Factory watch, which is a movie called Witchery. And then starring David Hasselhoff. But I didn't post about Class of 1984. It had been so long since I saw Class of 1984. And Scream Factory's Blu-ray of it is amazing. It looks so good. And that movie is so entertaining. I had so much fun with it. And I was tweeting out like quotes, which seemed like weird, cryptic, like suicide notes and stuff. But they were just weird quotes from Class of 1984.
Before I responded to you, I actually looked up because I'm like, I know this is from a movie.
Yeah,
I saw
right.
It was from Class of 1984.
I know this guy doesn't have an original thought.
I know he really wants to kill himself.
If he's tweeting life is pain, I know those aren't his words.
Even though life still is pain, but he's borrowing that from somebody.
He thinks it. He doesn't say it.
That dude should fucking kill himself. He has no original ideas.
That's weird that you tweeted that back to me.
Kill yourself. Do it. No one wants your unoriginality.
Hashtag National Best Friend Day. But if you haven't seen the movie in a long time or ever,
I've never seen that.
Do go back. Michael J. Fox has like his earliest role, I think, unless Midnight Madness was before this. He's just quoted as Michael Fox, and he has like little chub, and he gets
little chub,
stabbed. Well, he gives me a little chub. I'm saying he has a little chub on him, like a little baby face.
Ooh, a baby face.
And it's so amazing. How crazy. I mean, I don't want to spoil it, but like the whole movie is this music teacher being tormented by the worst students. They're basically like gang members, you know, and right. It opens with this scary crawl about like other high schools aren't like this .. yet. And Roddy McDowell is in it, and Perry King plays this high school music teacher being tormented by these gang member students. I mean, it has sort of the same worldview as Death Wish 3, a beloved classic at this movie. And then at the end, when he finally, like, again, I don't want to spoil shit, but like when he finally stands up to them or kind of takes his revenge, it goes to the craziest, most violent places. You're like, wasn't this dude just conducting a high school band? Like, how did he turn
into between a treble clef and a bass clef?
Yeah, right. How did this guy just turn into Charles Bronson? But it gets so violent and awesome.
That's great. I should watch that. It's Free Space Day when this drops.
This will come out on Free Space Day. And I'm torn because I wanted to watch Savage Streets today for revenge, but I ended up watching Retribution. So I might watch Savage Streets for Free Space Day, which means I have to find another day to watch God Told Me To, Larry Cohen's classic, still unseen by me.
I watched Scream Factory. I was so confused. I think I texted you because I'm a dummy. And I was like, early. I don't know what to watch because this is fucking – being best friends with Doug is no picnic is my point. I am a lot of work. And I text Patrick. I'm like, you run a movie site. What should I watch? And I'm like, I don't understand the rules of the game.
Yeah.
And you said, dude, you could watch almost anything. Scream Factory has tons of movies out there. And I didn't understand that. Yes. Oh, right. Scream Factory is re-released stuff. And I thought I had to watch like a physical copy of a Scream Factory thing. And I was like, Patrick, hold my hand. I saw Ravenous, which is great. That's a great movie.
That is so far, good.
By the way, Junesploitation for me, I know it's only day 9. I missed one day because I went to Disneyland with the family.
Super lame.
It's been really fun. It's been great. I feel like most everything aside from Big Trouble.
Wow, that's the worst it got for you.
Which is great, right? I mean, or White Zombie. I just was like, man, White Zombie. More like, help me out here. More like...
I'm not really sure.
Bad zombie.
There it is, bad zombie. I've only seen, I watched a movie called The Invisible Maniac that I really did not like. But other than that, I've liked or had fun with everything I've seen.
Is there an Italian Horror Day this year?
Of course there is.
God. See, that's where you turn, that's where like people are like, fuck Junesploitation, I'm out of here.
I think I put it closer to the end this year. Not even necessarily on purpose, but no.
I will never understand that about you. You're such a glutton for like, I don't like this. It makes me feel weird. I gotta watch it every time I watch
it. And they appreciate it.
Fulci makes me uncomfortable. I can't stop watching.
Oh my gosh. I can't wait. I have like 4 different Fulci movies I have to watch.
You are changing. We are drifting apart.
No, we're not. Don't you say that. I don't know what else to talk about.
You should chill yourself.
This is not Junesploitation related, but I recently rewatched Malice, which I reviewed at DVD Verdict because it just came out on Blu-ray. Have you seen Malice?
I mean, it's such a generic title that I might have seen Malice.
Alec Baldwin.
Sharon Stone?
No. Alec Baldwin, Nicole Kidman, Bill Pullman. Early 90s. Nah. Kind of psychological, psychosexual thriller. You know, so generic at the time, every movie was one of these. And yet, this one's like shot by Gordon Willis and Jerry Goldsmith does the score. And Scott Frank, who wrote Get Shorty and Minority Report and Dead Again, and has now directed a couple of good movies, The Lookout and Walk Among the Tombstones, and Aaron Sorkin. Those are the two. They're like two of the best screenwriters in the last 20 years, and they are the writers of this movie.
Okay.
And so it's very famous because Alec Baldwin gives this long speech about, like, you ask if I have a God.
Closing. Oh.
Yeah, basically. It's like you ask if I have a God complex because he's a surgeon, and it ends with, I am God. And he just fucking nails it. And it's such an Aaron Sorkin speech, like, to a crazy degree. The movie is like garbage, but it's the best garbage. Like,
I
want to
see
it love
right
it.
Now. Yeah. I've got two movies I want to watch for Free Space Day then. Are any of these on Netflix?
Malice is not. What was the other one? Class of 1984? I don't think is either.
Why?
You got some work to do. Get on the Amazon, order a VCR, order some DVDs.
What are you doing to me? What are you doing? You're only recommending things I can't in a million years. I cannot watch this in a million years.
Yeah.
There's no way I can watch this. If it doesn't directly stream to my one-click
Samsung smart
TV.
You could rent them, I think, from Amazon. I think they're both available for rent
and
from
Amazon.
And
spend my money?
But I love Malice, and I can't defend it. I mean, I think everybody knows the movie that they're making, I think. Okay. Maybe not. Maybe they were all really serious about it. But so many people show up in it too, like B.B. Newworth and Tobin Bell from the Saw series. Gwyneth Paltrow has one scene because she was not anybody at the time. This was 93. Right.
Somebody's daughter.
She was.
That's how she got a career.
I had a lot of fun watching it. Not June Sploitation, but
Goop was just an idea in the back of her tiny brain at that point.
Let's talk about two quick things, and then
Alec Baldwin. I saw the other day, I watched way too much of Working Girl on HBO.
No such thing.
My sister, Grease 2, Working Girl, that might have been it. Those were the two movies that were on like every day.
Working Girl is a great
movie. It's not bad at all, but I have such a weird relationship with it because just like when I would wake up, my sister is older than me and is a senior when I was a freshman. So she controlled like the radio. She controlled the TV. She was a bully is my point. She had strong hands and just beat me down because I was a weakling. I was a pansy, and she would play these movies. And I have Working Girl memorized. I've got Grease 2, a garbage movie, memorized. I've got every Garth Brooks song memorized because before she'd shower before me and to blast Garth Brooks from the bathroom, and I'd be so mad at her right now just for thinking about it. She actually is visiting me next week, and I'm gonna cancel her ticket. I'll be honest. Alec Baldwin in Working Girl is the Italian sleazeball boyfriend of Melanie Griffith. What's your thoughts, Melanie Griffith? Yay or nay?
You know,
she is a vacant.
Yeah,
like I get that she is this sort of embodiment of 80s kind of big, busty, you know, bombshell, blonde, lots of B's, lots of alliteration in that sentence. But man, her, and I, she has sincerity when she delivers a line, she's sincere, but it's one note sort of.
Yeah, she's somebody who might stumble into a good performance by accident, but
yeah,
it's weird that she was a big movie star for a long time. And I possibly nominated for an Oscar for Working Girl.
That's insane.
I know Sigourney Weaver was.
That's also insane.
And Joan Cusack, or am I thinking of Joan Cusack for Broadcast News? I think Joan Cusack was for Broadcast News.
That's insane.
A lot of things happened in the 80s, I guess is my point.
Alec Baldwin's in that. He's a greaseball, and it's great. He does this sort of over-the-top, ridiculous 80s, early 80s Italian sort of performance.
He's all like, I am God. Forget about it.
I mean, for real. It just, and he had this greasy hair. Yeah,
he's perfect, like, always be closing. Wagoosh.
<Ba-da-bing. laughs> All right, sorry.
Two quick news stories I want to throw out at you. Then one comment that I want to discuss with you. And then we're going to close out with a little bit of what's that?
And then pizza?
And then maybe pizza across the country. Well, it's funny you mentioned that because my first news item that I wanted to bring up is pizza related. Have you heard about the new Pizza Hut projector box?
Hail corporate, I have. I've heard they should, here's my take, they should work on their pizza and leave the boxes to somebody else.
Zing!
I just literally saw a headline, that's the as deep as I got into it, that it's like a white cardboard box that you can project from your smartphone or tablet a movie, right?
Yeah, basically, like it Yeah.
But that's just a gimmick, because there's anything white I can project on the wall of my bedroom. All the homemade
VHS. You don't project onto the pizza box.
Oh, then what is it?
The pizza box folds into a projector. There's a lens that screws onto the side of it, and then you basically put your phone, I guess, is the only thing that would fit into it, and then it would obviously, you know, make the image larger, and you would project that onto a sheet or a screen or whatever, and then it supposedly also comes with like a download code for a free movie download.
That's crazy. I don't know if I completely understand even what you're describing, but that's really weird. It seems like a lot of work went into this thing that has nothing to do with pizza.
Yeah, it's so weird.
Do I get to eat it crust first?
Has anyone ever associated Pizza Hut with movies besides me?
Are they like, stuffing the movies with cheese?
I associate those two things to a weird degree because...
Well, that's just a personal weird thing.
Exactly. Like, that was always my tradition. When Erica would go out of town, I would order the worst pizza... which has now become my go-to, and
now the worst pizza is just like I can't. It's Waterworld, basically. You're saying it's the worst pizza, but you keep going back to it. So in 4 years, you're gonna have a podcast where you love pizza
because
love
it's such a mental thing. Now I associate like, ooh, I get to eat this terrible pizza and watch a movie that like no one would ever want to watch, and so. Like when we would get together for heavy action or whatever, like that's what we order, right? We order Pizza Hut. And so I'm fascinated by this idea that they're like, people don't want Pizza Hut anymore. What if we turn the box into a movie projector?
What if our crazy bread, that's Pizza Hut, right? No, what's Pizza Hut?
That's
have?
Little Caesars. No, no.
They just have
breads.
What if instead of chicken wings, we sell tires? The chicken wing turns into a tire. It's a very
in 2015, as the theatrical experience began to die, in stepped an unlikely savior, Pizza Hut. Pizza Hut. Transforming
now, the way my we question see to you movies. Is this is kind of off topic a little bit. I know you this is true of audience that Patrick Bromley does love to eat garbage pizza and watch movies after the kids go to bed and if his wife's out of town, or even if they're all in town and he just wants to watch movies, he wants garbage pizza.
That's right.
Is it exclusively Pizza Hut now? Because for a while, we'd rotate. We'd go Little Caesars maybe. We'd do a little Domino's.
Yeah, no. I don't like those
Papa
bad.
John's.
I don't like those bad pizzas as much as I like Pizza Hut bad pizza.
So Pizza Hut bad pizza is like malice. It's
and
like
now
garbage,
I literally feel angry when
way.
I have to pay actual pizza prices for pizza. I'm like, hey, I know of a place that gives me a whole pizza for $7 and a movie projector.
Your wife is a big foodie. I know she demands Lumel Nottis at least once a month, and that is expensive.
It's
pie.
Crazy expensive, and I can't project a single thing when I'm done. I've tried. Nothing happens.
You're telling me the slab of sausage in Lumel Nottis can't project anything?
No. It does, but in standard def. And who wants that?
Substandard definitely. Yeah. So that's really odd. I have to now look at that and look it up and see how that actually works, and if the light from this little phone can project through the little cardboard origami contraption you've described onto a wall to watch a movie.
I suspect no. Next news item I want to throw out at you. I believe today it was announced that AMC, formerly American Movie Classics, and now just, I don't know. AMC.
Oh, the TV channel. Not the theater chain.
Correct. Okay. No, the TV channel that used to show classic movies and now...
eponymous in the title, right?
Yeah. Now just, I don't know what they show. Well, they have their own original programming. It was announced, I believe, today that they are now beta testing...
Betamax?
An all horror streaming service... I believe it's called Shudder.
Oh.
And it would cost $5 a month or $50 a year. And it's just horror movies, old to new.
That $50 a year is way more than $5 a month times 12, isn't it?
No, $5 a month times 12 would be $60 a year. So it's actually a savings of $10. $10
let me,
that you could
let me
put.
Do my gazintas.
You could.
Oh, you're right.
You could
I
put
apologize.
That $10 towards a Pizza Hut pizza, get a movie projector. And you could be projecting Halloween 4 by the end of the night.
Didn't there used to be an all horror movie channel, and it failed? Correct.
FearNet, which folded into Chiller,
Right.
And I get Chiller, but only in standard def, and I don't ever watch it.
I never got Fearnet.
No, Holliston was on Fearnet.
Okay.
And I never got Fearnet, but I could watch it on demand. So I would watch Holliston like the next day. And right. I get Chiller. I don't ever watch Chiller. And obviously the rationale behind this is, you know, that Fear Fest in October is a big deal at AMC.
Sure.
And of course, I look forward to it, even though I feel like it's kind of a pale imitation of what it once was. And now it's like four different Halloween sequels and a few Child's Play sequels.
Right.
And maybe like the House of Wax remake for a whole month.
Well, it's one of those things we, you know, 10 years ago, I remember scanning the dial, surfing the channels and looking like in October, anytime in October, on my TV, looking for channels that had any scary movie. And oftentimes there'd be nights where nothing scary was playing. And I feel like AMC stepped up and filled this void. And especially with like today's utes, that they love horror movies and they love a specific kind of horror movie, be it the torture porn horror movie or whatever. And now that's what AMC is constantly delivering. And I feel like they've kind of filled that niche. But I refuse to watch. Again, I'm even thinking about like the HBOs and the Showtimes. Like they don't even show, they'll show like Christmas with the Cranks in October because whoever's programming HBO is the dumbest person in the world.
It's a tank full of manatees. With idea watch,
watching AMC, it's impossible. It's like watching IFC, and AMC is even worse because they have to edit out all the gore and all the language and all the titties. At least IFC has, it's like uncut. It's just every 7 minutes there's an 8 minute commercial break.
So I'm curious if this kind of right now, like I said, it's just in beta testing. But if they were to make this live, is this something that you would ever consider subscribing to?
Only if, now I'm assuming it's $5 a month, $50 a year. I love horror movies, especially only in October. I really am not a horror person fan. I know you can watch horror movies in April when the sun's shining and, you know, whatever. I can't. I really have to stick to like, and come November 1st, I need like a cleanse, like a eye bleach to get the horror out of my system. But then around late summer, I jones up for Scary Movie Month again. I know you do probably as soon as there's like a cold spring day. It's like, reminds me of October.
100%.
I don't think I'm the audience for that, even though I love horror movies because there's so many options on existing streaming platforms, Amazon Prime or Netflix or whatever, that I can just easily go and watch stuff there. I've got my own library too. I don't know if I mean, I don't know what, would they have a catalog of everything?
Right now it says access to over 200 scary movies.
See, that to me, like, I feel like there's right now, there's probably 300 scary movies on Netflix, if not 500, if not 1,000.
Yeah, and most of those are pretty garbage. Are the worst, yeah.
Well, sure, and that's the nature of horror movies. I stress the
silly. There are some of these services already. I know there's like a streaming service called Screambox that you could subscribe to, and I've looked, and their offerings are terrible, so I would not subscribe. And in theory, I'm all on board for this AMC thing. I hear that. I'm like, yeah, 100% right now I would subscribe. I want it. But I would probably have to look at the lineup first because there's a good chance that I will own already 75%, if not 100% of the movies that they are offering.
And the stuff you don't own, you don't want to see.
Right. So we'll see.
Well,
but I like the idea.
How many do you subscribe to? How many different services do you subscribe to?
Just Netflix. And we have Amazon Prime, I guess. So I watch stuff on there every once in a while. Speaking of which.
No. You have Full Moon Streaming.
And Full Moon Streaming. That's where I was going to go. Those are the three.
Okay.
Just real quick about Amazon Prime. If you are a Prime member and you have access to their instant video service, Why Don't You Play in Hell is currently now streaming on Amazon Prime. It was in my top 10 last year. A movie I really, really loved. It would 100% work for Junesploitation on a free space day. I'm sure there are other days that it would work, but if you haven't seen it yet, you should check it out. That's it.
It's a horror. I mean, what's it about?
It's not a horror movie.
It's
super violent, but it's not a horror movie. It's like a comedy about a group of wannabe filmmakers called the Fuck Bombers who get involved with some they get involved with some gangsters.
I was on the show where you talked about this because I remember that more.
How could you forget the Fuck Bombers?
Wait, was that also that was your best of show, right? That was like you talked
correct
about,
yeah that was in my top 10.
Yeah,
so check it out if you haven't already, because it's I love that movie.
Yeah,
So we'll kind of wait and see. I want to see what happens with Shudder. I 100% wish it had a different name. But, you know, I get a lot of stuff from Full Moon Streaming, too, because even though there's a lot of times where I'm like, I don't feel like watching one of these Full Moon movies, they have access to all the Blue Underground stuff, which is like a lot of these kind of exploitation movies that I have wanted to see. There are several Fulci movies on there right now that I haven't seen.
How much is Full Moon Streaming?
I think it's like $7 a month, but if you subscribe for 6 months, it's cheaper, and you get like 3 or 6 free Blu-rays with it too. So,
oh wow, okay,
yeah. That shit pays for itself.
How many other streaming services? I'm just kind of out of it, obviously. How many? I mean, I've got
well, Amazon, Hulu Prime, Plus.
I don't have Hulu Plus. I have HBO Go, but that's just because I have HBO.
HBO
as part
Now.
Of my cable.
Now there's HBO Now.
But isn't HBO Now also only linked to like AT&T or something? I know it's going to eventually change, but I think when they launched, they were like exclusive partners.
Yeah, it was like just through Apple,
some,
right? I think just or, through
yeah,
Apple
just through
TV.
Apple.
Yeah.
It reminds me of like when the iPhone launched, it was just, you can only get an iPhone, the iPhone 3 through AT&T, I think.
Yeah, for the longest time, like you had to have.
And now it's just everywhere, which I have to think that everything is going to change towards like, yeah, make this public. I was actually just talking to my wife about sports because we always have conversations every like month or so. We talk about cord cutting just because it's the cable bills are so expensive and we don't
just
watch
cause we
that
have
much.
Like sick family that we're tired of paying for their hospital bills.
we're gonna let go of Aunt Marge. We're thinking about, you know, like we have Dish Network. I like it. I think it's I've had Comcast, which sucked. I hated it. My mom has DirecTV. I find it very slow. Like even to change the channel, there's a delay that drives me crazy. I like Dish, but I'm also like, is it worth the amount of money we're paying for it? Just because it's, you know, like I don't watch TV. The only things we watch, which we can get over like the digital antenna now, is local channels. And the one thing I would probably want is sports, because I still access, I know that you don't care about sports, but ESPN or whatever, which made me think like, why don't, like, it just would make so much sense for all these sports teams, just like, scary movies, just any category of things to say, like, I'm a sports team. I'm going to make, like, I would gladly pay $5 a game to watch the Bears in high def, like a perfect picture, as opposed to like not being able to watch it at all and maybe resorting to some underhanded ways of watching it, you know? And it's,
well, that's because you moved away from Chicago. You
that's
fool.
Absolutely true. I know.
All of the games are televised here.
My
here
bust.
In Chicago. There's two more things I want to
down
get
here.
To.
It's our time now.
There's two more things I want to get to, and we're running a little bit long, so we'll see if we have a chance to get to them. So the other day...
Well, one and long, I've said nothing. We said nothing.
Yeah, well, no, we talked a lot about technology, spent a long time on Super Troopers. The other day, we got a comment on the website that I wanted to call out and talk about with you. And I don't know if you've seen this comment yet or not. So this isn't something that Doug and I planned ahead of time. I'm going to read the comment and then I want to talk about it. Okay. It's basically from somebody who is anonymous. There's no name attached to the profile, although there is kind of a profile that goes along with it. The point is this. Here's what it says. I'm so sad that I haven't seen like 80% of the films F This Movie reviews. I appreciate and enjoy all the writing on the ones I have seen, so I keep coming back for more. I just don't think most of the films you're writing about are for my demographic, female 30s. Sorry if this sounds selfish, but I'm just going to put it out there for the sake of, well, having more good things online. Don't you have like some women who could review here? Or anyone who could expound on movies geared toward, well, women? Just a thought. You could even point me in the direction of a different blog, and that would be cool. IDK ... and so I wanted to talk about this. I don't know. I thought it was interesting, not just specifically addressing this comment, but the notion of sort of online criticism or what we want when we go to different movie websites. Because obviously I appreciate the fact that she says she likes the site. She likes what she reads. She wants it to be more for her. Sure. So that's all super complimentary. And I'm not talking about this to call out this person or refute or attack what she has said. I just thought that it was an interesting grounds for discussion. And Lord knows we had nothing to talk about on this episode. So, so I don't know. I thought it was interesting that it was like, hey, could you be more of what I want? And I think that's problematic way to approach a website.
Running a website.
Yeah. Of course, we would love to literally be everything to everyone. Right. And I wish that, you know, everybody
all the right people. We play all the right games.
I wish that we could be serving everyone the way that they want to be served, and they would feel like, hey, they're writing just for me, you know. And that's the problem, is I have tried to create a site that is just for me. And I don't say that in a selfish way. I say that because I know the experience of going and finding a site or finding a writer online and feeling like, oh my God, they're talking just to me. And I think when you're able to do that, that's how you build an audience. If you're just being super broad and generic, you will find an audience, and especially if it's you're delivering movie news. But I don't think you'll get the people who are passionate. I don't think you build a community the way that we have here, because I think by creating a site that I feel like is geared towards the stuff that I'm into, the stuff that I like, the voice that I like, we have found a bunch of people, including this commenter, who feel the same way, who like the same things, and who keep coming back because it feels like, hey, they're writing this stuff just for me.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's a lot of things that you specifically, or maybe JB, will write about that I have not seen before. And I've seen tons of movies, just like most of our fans.
Take it easy, bragger.
No, it's not. I'm going to really make fun of myself now, in all seriousness, because I don't see nearly as much as A, I want to, or B, I should, given how much I used to see, maybe as a high school kid or a college kid who is, like, you know, going to school for movies, in quotes. Back in the 90s and early 2000s, when I was single and had more disposable income, I would just watch everything. I remember, we've talked about this before, like when DVDs first came down in price, you just would buy everything. Yeah. Like every week I go to Best Buy and spend easily $100 on just, and I built up my library, which now I don't think there's been a movie added for a couple years, but it still stands at several hundred movies, which is a pale imitation of what's in your basement, at the thousands upon thousands of movies that you have. My point is, there's a movie love, and I think that you touched upon it. We've talked about this so much in terms of this community that F This Movie fans and our F heads. It's a place that it's special to me, not just as a contributor and as your friend, but also as a reader. I read everything, even stuff that I don't is completely foreign to me. I've mentioned before, I'm not crazy about spaghetti westerns, but if Heath Holland writes about a spaghetti western, I read it, and it makes me enthusiastic about watching it. And I might not end up watching it, because again, life gets in the way, but you kind of want those things to inspire you, and the passion and the interest that the writers, and beyond the writers, that the fans and the friends that we have in the comments section, where they suggest things. I think Junesploitation excuse me, is the perfect example of that, because you'll see everyone kind of giving their two cents about what they chose, given the general category that you provided, what they chose to watch and why it was important to them, or why not, or why they didn't like it. And so much of that, and by and large, though, most of the reviews are positive, and most of them make you want to go out and watch something else. Now, I say that before, like, I'm probably of the staff at F This Movie. I'm very populist. I'm very sort of like, I see lots of the mainstream stuff. I don't dig too deep unless it's a Friday and I literally have nothing else to watch, and I'll text you, Patrick, and I'll say, like, what should I watch? And you'll say, watch The Congress, and I'll watch The Congress. And I feel better for having kind of dug deeper and watched something more obscure. I mean, all thanks to you. I'm not taking credit for that whatsoever, but I will lean on the people I know. And I think that that's the purpose of the site. It's like, I have you as my friend, and the site is like, I have the site too. I can go to the site. Believe me, how many times I've looked at Netflix, this movie, and I've watched Digstown, for crying out loud. It's like once a week, is my point.
You're a better man for it.
I think that the site is, I don't want to get too pompous or bloviating, but I think the site is great in that there really are the niche people that, like, they love what they love and they're unapologetic for it, and they write what they want to write about. And you are a part of that also. But I think there's so much that, like, a person probably found at this movie, for every commenter that's like this, and she has a valid point, I'm not taking that away, but every comment like that saying, like, can you do more stuff that's geared towards me? There's probably a person out there that says, I found you because of this obscure review, or maybe like JB's Unsung or The Overlook, where all he does is talk about movies that no one's seen. And that's the point of, I mean, the kind of the mission statement of that column. And not only that, but like the stuff that you'll see by privilege of being part of a critics festival or something, that, like, you want to champion the underdog these movies that aren't being mainstream released. And that makes me more of the, again, the mainstream guy. You know, like the last movie I saw in the theater was fucking Age of Ultron, you know, but I'm seeing a lot of stuff on Netflix.
By the way,
and stuff.
Do you remember when that movie came out?
Man, it's sticking with me like you can't believe. I can't, I have so much more to add to the hour and a half we talked about it. There's so much more out there that is obscure and is, and maybe she has a point in terms of the female perspective. I can't speak to that. I'm all man, baby. I'm going to call her baby from now on. We do have Melissa, I can't pronounce her last name.
Earn.
Earn. Yeah. That's it? I was going to say urine.
She totally called me out one time because she came up on the show and I was like, urine. Melissa, and there's a pause and I didn't say her last name. And then the next email I got from her was like, I could totally tell you were afraid to say my last name. And she was 100% right.
Well, it used to be she got married and, you know.
It was Henderson. That was easy.
Right. That was easy. Like Melissa and the Hendersons. I get
just,
it.
Just real quick, would Doug Deeper be your porn name? Just want to make sure that I just want to make sure that I got the gist of what you're saying. Well, here's the thing. It's like
again, my everyday name.
I appreciate the compliment. Like I really like what I read, but I haven't seen 80% of what you guys talk about. And the site definitely skews towards genre stuff. I wouldn't say it skews obscure because except for, you know, several of JB's columns, I don't think we're talking about super obscure movies, but obviously, you know, I'm way into action movies and horror movies. And so that's the kind of stuff that are, you know, Full Moon, whatever, the kind of stuff that I like writing about. So that's what I write about. And if this particular reader or if any other reader is not a fan of those things, then yeah, it's going to be problematic to find stuff that you feel like is geared towards you. My hope would be that if you do like the stuff that you read, and then we write about something that you haven't seen, if you're like, oh, I'm a fan of this person's voice, this critic's voice, or his or her opinions, and then they say, hey, this movie's really good, rather than say, like, well, I haven't seen 80% of the stuff you guys talk about, like, try to see some of the stuff that we are championing and see if that's for you, and maybe it'll take you down some new
right
paths.
I also don't,
you know,
subscribe to, like, the women's films or men's films. I do think, like, well, what am I?
Yeah, what? Right, right. I don't know. Like, right. Are we not representing?
I think there's an argument to be made for like a woman's perspective, but I don't
think
that's
the last
thing.
That is the last thing that I wanted to get to, but go ahead.
Just in terms of like a chick flick or, you know, or like, I mean, obviously like an 80s action movie is probably mostly geared towards guys, like not men, not boys, but guys. Like if you're watching that, you're a guy. And I think that there's obviously some movies that are geared towards women, like The Wedding Planner. One of my favorite movies. but I mean, some of my favorite, I mean, you and I both, like, we're such a sucker for, like, a well-done movie. It doesn't matter that, like, Return to Me is a movie I've talked about before. It's, like, I don't know if that's a chick flick, but I think it's definitely, like, kind of geared towards my sister, you know, and I love it. I love the way it makes me feel. I love a lot of romantic comedies. And
I do, too. And like, I know Adam Risky does. I mean, a lot of us at the site really do. And if we don't write about them as much, some of that, I think, just has to do with sort of the realities of the marketplace, which is to say the internet is not always interested in that stuff, you know. And while I don't write stuff that I just think like, well, this will get hits, this will get clicks, I do have to consider like, well, who is our audience? Who is the community that is here? And are they really going to respond to this article about you've right. got mail? Maybe. I don't know. I haven't tried it enough. I mean, when we review new releases, I feel like a lot of that stuff is populist. I just reviewed Spy. Is that a movie geared towards women or men? You know, when Adam Risky right. reviews 50 Shades of Grey, like, that's kind of insulting to say, like, well, that's a woman's movie, you know? And again, none of her points are invalid. And especially the last thing that she says, which is, don't you know any women who could write for the site? And that is something that you and I have talked about offline, not to pull back the curtain too much. This reader, to you, the reader, we have tried. I have tried to do that. One of the things that you and I have said, again, to each other is like, hey, there's a lot of white men writing about movies on the internet. You know, a lot of them have glasses and beards and like action and horror movies because a lot of us on the site, on this site, you know, and on all of the internet. And so, yes, I would love to diversify a little bit. I truly, truly would. It's not quite as simple as that, you know?
Right.
When it's right, I would love to pursue that. I was very happy to bring Melissa on last year for her enthusiasm and her voice. And she's a crazy, crazy Canadian person. And
she's Saskalooney.
So she is. Everything is in caps and has exclamation points. And I can't
apologize this constantly.
I cannot help but smile reading every single one of her pieces.
She's great, and I'm so glad she's part of the site. But let's be honest. I mean, it's not like we're out there hiring, meaning this is a passion project for everyone, more you than anyone else. But everyone is taking time out of their day to do this, and that's not to make it seem like, oh, poor us at all. I'm not saying that whatsoever, but it's not like we're putting a listing in Monster.com asking for female writers. It's like if
– Do people still use Monster.com?
I don't even know. A career builder, Monster, Monsters, Inc.? So yeah, it's more about, you know, it's easier said than done to say like, let's diversify. And then how do you go about diversifying? Because I think once people realize, and this has been said a lot, on the site about, there's a lot of sites that come and go, especially about movies. It seems like that's a really easy one for people to jump into because everyone loves movies. So a college kid's going to be like, I'm making a movie site. I'm going to have a Blogspot or a WordPress. I'm making a movie site. But once they realize the difficulty in putting out new content, and thankfully you've got now stock staff, you know, that can pick up some of the slack, but still let's kid ourselves. It's still about 78% Patrick Bromley and the rest of us just kind of fill in the cracks, but it takes a lot of commitment and a lot of time. And I think that even when you bring on a new person, they might, and I'm not even saying this from personal experience with the site, but they might be enthusiastic at first and then they realize the workload, because once you press submit to Patrick and say, here's my article, you have a wave of, I could say this from personal experience, there's a wave of relief. And then the next day happens, you're like, well, shit, I got to start working on next week's. And again, for Patrick, it goes, I have to start working on tomorrow's post, not just next week, but tomorrow. And I got to do two tomorrow. And that's where it comes in. You know, it's really hard. Yeah. So to focus on something that just to be populist, no, you have to focus on the things that you love. You have to focus on the things that kind of get you going and
That's
get
how
your juices flowing.
That's how you end up not quitting, you know, because you're excited to write this thing about coffee or whatever.
Well, to champion some a lesser known movie from a director you want to see get more work.
Right.
Like that's the, like, yeah, I'm going to try and help out in the small little way we can. It's not a big site. I mean, hopefully we grow and hopefully people read it and like it and respond to it. But, you know, every little bit helps. And if we can help, you know, somebody make movies that make us happy, awesome.
And again, would I love to have more women on the staff? Yes, of course.
I would love to
have
more women.
Some diversification in terms of racial makeups. Yes, of course I would. Like I said, there's plenty of white men writing about movies on the internet. But it has to be the right fit, and when that comes along, hopefully I will see the opportunity and seize upon it. But again, we're very lucky that people have emailed us before or written to us on Facebook and said, like, hey, you know, I'd like to write for you guys, here's a sample, or would you be interested? And it's super flattering and it's really nice. Usually I just kind of say, like, yeah, we're not really hiring right now, because it does go beyond just, hey, you write well, you know.
Right, it's about getting along and having the same voice, not the same voice, but the same kind of like jiving with the rest of us,
right? Knowing what each person contributes, knowing that we can get along, like even just kind of in a professional way. And again, we're very lucky with Heath and Adam Risky and Melissa and people that have kind of come on that, like, we've all become friends, you know.
Right, but even if like an African-American woman comes on and is like, hey, I have a perverted sense of humor, we'd say, no thanks, that position is filled.
Exactly.
Like Doug has the market cornered on that. So take a hike, Foxy Brown.
So we'll see what the future holds. And I really am sorry that, like, you feel like you're not being represented, or that you feel like not enough of the site is for you. I hope that you'll stick around, and I hope that you'll find some stuff that maybe is for you, or I don't know, we'll try to be better about kind of branching out.
I don't think that's just lip service. I mean, we're so self-aware, and maybe that's part of the sort of like the I don't know, white male guilt. Like, we're so hyper aware of, like, we want to be inclusive, and we want to, I don't know, include everybody. That's the same thing as inclusive, right? Bring everyone in the tent, and to make sure that everyone's satisfied, but it's impossible. You can't do that. So, but we've got, if you love kung fu movies, you've got Mark on Knows Kung Fu.
That's
if you love, spaghetti westerns, you've got Heath Holland. If you love, I don't know what Adam likes these days. Who knows? The guy is hard to, isn't hard nut to crack.
So thank you for the comment, and hopefully you'll stick with us, honestly. Last thing I wanted to do, and this probably won't work because the categories are too broad.
Oh, jeez.
But we haven't done this in a long time, and sometimes on these all-encompassing shows, we used to play a little game I like to call Best Worst. And I was thinking about doing a Junesploitation edition of Best Worst.
I'll do one for you right off the bat.
Okay.
Well, do you have a theme
Go
or
ahead.
Something?
Well, I wasn't going to do directors. I was going to do the categories for the day.
I was going to do an actor.
All right, go ahead.
Sid Haig, Best Worst.
Sid Haig, Best Worst. Gosh, his best would be... Okay, what are we basing this on? The best movie that he's in?
Whatever
or
you
the
want.
Best he's been in a movie?
I would kind of argue the best he's been, the best like kind of memorable Sid Haig performance.
I mean, Spider Baby is awesome, but I think if you're really going like for purely Sid Haig, you almost have to go Devil's Rejects because I think he's really, really great in that and House of a Thousand Corpses. I would not say those are either of those is the best movie that he's been in.
Sure.
But that's kind of the best he's been. Worst, again, hard to say. He's been in some real dog shit.
I'm looking at his IMDb right now. It's 135 acting appearances. Now, who's to say how many of those are, you know, all movies or if they're whatever, but that's
I think
a lot
the
of-
worst thing I can think of off the top of my head is Night of the Living Dead 3D. Because it's really, really, you know, Night of the Living Dead is in that situation where, like, it's kind of in the public domain, and so anyone is free to kind of remake it and spin off. And there have been a whole run of recent sort of Night of the Living Dead. There was an animated one, then there was one like Night of the Living Dead Regenerated, or I don't know. It was, but there's a 3D one that's real, real garbage, and he's in it, and it sucks.
Ooh.
So. For you.
Yeah, because I can't even answer the Sid Haig thing. That's how I like to play the game. I like to give you impossible questions and then back away like, what? I'm the game show host.
gosh, for you, let's go by category. Best, worst, 80s action.
Well, I mean, best would be Die Hard. But I mean, here's the
correct.
Thing, though. Well, right, Die Hard's the best. I mean, a famous person, I think Abraham Lincoln once said, what is your favorite Christmas movie and why is it Die Hard? It's one of those things where Die Hard is an everyday movie, and so for 80s action day I kind of didn't pick it, A, because I've seen it 10 times, but B, because you want to see something new, and C, because you want to see something a little exploitative for this month specifically. But 80s action, I mean, Die Hard is the best. I like the Lethal Weapon 1. I even like Lethal Weapon 2 a lot. I used to like that more than one. So you
like
kind of show
the weapon too. It's got some.
No,
problems.
I used to say I liked it more, and then you're like, what? And you're like, you showed me. Like, I think you sat me down in your chair and like, this is Lethal Weapon 1. And I like 2 hours later, you're like, and this is Lethal Weapon 2. And then I watched both, and I'm like, you're right, I was wrong. Blame my sister. She probably watched it in the summer one day.
Well, she has diplomatic immunity.
And the worst, I mean, you can speak more to that. I have been lucky that I have you as a best friend that you say, watch this, don't watch this. And I've avoided so much of the shit that comes out in any genre. So I don't even know where to go with that. I mean, what would you even say?
Because I was thinking about this, like zombies, you know, it's impossible to pick a worst zombie movie because there's so many, and so many of them are so bad and I haven't even seen them, you know, because I can kind of just tell like, yeah, there's no point. I mean, there are a ton of terrible 80s action movies. There's a movie called White Fire that's like unbelievably shitty that I think Fred Williamson is in. I know Robert Ginty is in it. And I remember my uncle renting it in Missouri. He was kind of a hillbilly. And we were over, you know, there for the weekend on the way to see my grandmother in Missouri. And he was like, all right, kids, I rented a movie. It's called White Fire. And he put it on. And this was a movie that had to be trimmed from like an X. And he was showing it to like 6 and 7 year olds. And within the, like pretty early on, I feel like somebody got their arm cut off with like a chainsaw or something. And then my parents made me stop watching White Fire, but it has always lived on in my head. And it's on Amazon Prime. So I watched a bunch of it the other day. Like, let me relive this memory. And it's really, really terrible. You know, is it the worst? I don't know. Like, if we're going to go big budget, well known, you know.
Yeah, I'd say stick to big budget, well known.
I am not a fan of Rambo First Blood Part 2.
Okay.
It is so not the worst 80s action movie. I know that, but I have weird objections to that movie that not everybody has. People love that movie. I have a lot of problems with it. So again, is it the worst? No, probably something with Chuck Norris is even worse. Or Charles Bronson, you know, Chuck Norris is kind of garbage. Like, he makes a lot of shit movies and he's bad in them.
So is your favorite then the best would be Die Hard? Or, I mean, what else would be?
Because
Die Hard is kind of the untouchable whatever. What else would be in the same, you know, arena?
First Lethal Weapon is the shit.
What about First Blood?
First Blood is great. I think First Blood is great. The original Terminator is an unbelievable movie. Aliens, if we're going to call it an action movie, is a pretty awesome movie. Action Jackson came out in the 80s. Predator came out in the 80s. Cobra would not be up there for me.
Is his name Cobretti in Cobra?
Marion Cobretti.
Okay, just want to make sure of that.
Yeah, you better believe it. I mean, listen, I love Tango and Cash, right? It is a terrible movie. If you are a fan of the podcast, How Did This Get Made? They recently did a podcast on Tango and Cash where they just obliterate it. Like, when they point out... what I like about that podcast is not so much that they're not just ripping on movies, you know. What they do is they apply very sound logic to movies. And they're bringing things up that I was like, you know what? I literally have never once thought about that, but they are absolutely right. But for whatever reason, maybe because of when I saw it or just that the movie was working for me, like, Tango and Cash just continues to wash over me. And I love it, and I don't question just how stupid and ridiculous it is until you hear someone point out, like, oh, and why this? And you're like, yeah, wait, why this? You're 100% right. So I listened to it and I agreed with every single one of their points and none of it mattered because I still love
the movie. Yeah. I saw that movie for the first time with you.
Yes.
And even in our 30s, watching Tango and Cash, me for the first time, you for the 15th time, we were both acknowledging, like, this is like the dumbest thing ever. And it's still just so much fun, and I've only seen it like 2 or 3 times total, and I still love the fact that, like, in the newspaper it says, like, Tango gets another one.
That's one of the things they bring up, don't worry, like, why so many headlines
about, because we all know the local busts. Police officer by his last name and his busts, like, we know the score. The whole opening sequence is one of the best opening sequences in any 80s action movie, I think, with the trucks on the road and, like, him pulling out the revolver. It's unbelievable.
Robert Zadar, may he rest in peace. He died recently. No, and I love that movie. And actually, after we watched that, that viewing was actually what gave birth to my heavy action column.
Yeah. You're welcome.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Everyone's welcome.
I think when we watched it, I think I leaned over and said, hey, Patrick, you should write a column about this genre of movie.
This is some happy action, babe. You became Dennis Miller, which I thought was so
very
weird.
Very conservative.
Yeah, right? And the Democrats are like Tango and the Republicans are like Cash, man. I believe is what
I said.
Would have said.
Oh, I mean what he would have said.
I
got one for you.
Go for it.
Best worst. Best euphemism for masturbation in a movie. Go.
Oh, God. I don't know. What is it?
Double clicking my mouse from American Pie. And the worst, probably flogging the dolphin from There's Something About Mary.
Well, I'm glad you got that settled.
That popped in my head the other day. What's her name? Not Tay Leone.
Natasha Leone.
Natasha Leone saying, you've never double-clicked your mouse. And it was like...
She becomes Dennis Miller, just talking out the side of her mouth.
I've never double-clicked it.
Sounds of Beverly Hills, bam.
And I was like, oh my God, this was so written in like the early 90s. And it's like, hey, you've never had connected your modem to AOL? Like, sorry, that's want to bring that up. What's that's what happens when I orgasm.
Best worst ninja movie? Do you have one?
Would Bloodsport be a ninja movie?
No, not really. It's more of a Bloodsport movie. Like, if there movies about sports, you know, blood sports.
I love Bloodsport, but I can't use it. So American Ninja? No, that's not that great though. No. It's pretty great. No. American Ninja in Paris. That was pretty good. Julie Delpy was spot on in that one. What's yours? And then I'll just piggyback on yours.
Oh, no, I couldn't possibly say.
You couldn't possibly? What's the worst? What's the worst ninja movie?
Again, there are so many terrible ones that of the ones that I've seen, shoot. I mean, I did not love Ninja Assassin. although, I mean, there's parts of that that are crazy violent and fun, even though it's all like CGI blood. In terms of best, I mean, I'm such a fan of, like, especially the first two ninja movies in the canon cycle, Enter the Ninja and Revenge of the Ninja.
Wait, which is the one we saw with, oh, that one's the best.
Which one?
It was a canon movie. He's like in Japan, I think. It's a white guy. Oh my God.
What?
I'm such a,
did we watch it here or did you watch it on your own?
I might've watched it on my own.
I feel like you watched Revenge of the Ninja on your own.
That might be the best any movie ever.
That's Shokasugi, where his family is murdered in Japan. He comes to America. He's working at like an import-export place, and they're importing drugs, and he gets mad, and he ninjas their ass.
Yes. And what's that called?
Revenge of the Ninja.
Love it.
Recently released on Blu-ray. So everyone check that out, as was Enter the Ninja, which is currently available on Netflix Instant. That's the one where Franco Nero plays a ninja and he's balding and has a mustache. And you're like, he's not a ninja.
Where would Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles rate?
Which, like the new one? Because I really didn't like that. Or are we talking like part three, Turtles in Time?
Three ninjas.
Three ninjas I've actually never seen.
Beverly Hills Ninja.
Also never seen.
Would these be ninja movies? I guess.
I mean,
ninjas in the goddamn title.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't, like, for discussion, I probably wouldn't do that, but if these are, like, movies that you want to watch on Ninja Day for Junesploitation, go for it.
Wait, was it American Ninja 2, The Confrontation?
That you watched? No, that's Dudikoff, yeah.
It might have been Dudikoff. I love anything Dudikoff's in.
You're a big, Dudikoff.
I'm a Dudikoff, which is German for head, so I'm a
I was so Dudikoff trying to head. Come up with like the noun that Dudikoff fans call themselves, and I couldn't
Dudikoffs.
Do it. But
K-O-P-Fs.
You brought in the German.
I
and you made it
German
work,
college.
Baby.
That's right. Dirndl Schultz would be very proud of me.
What is it? K-O-P-Fs?
Kopf? K-O-P-F, yeah.
K-O-P-F, okay.
He's just K-O-F-F, though.
No, I know. I just want to know how to spell it.
Yeah, like if you say you're krank in der Kopf, it means you're sick in the head.
I want to know how to spell it just in case this episode happens to be called Dudikoffs.
Well, let me double check that then. I'll get back to you after you spell
it. I'm going to start wrapping things up. Thank you guys, everybody, for listening. Thank you for all the great work you're doing with Junesploitation. Keep it up. We still have like 3 weeks left, which is both daunting and exhilarating. You can follow us on Twitter if you don't already. We're at F This Movie. Like our page on Facebook, facebook.com/F This Movie. Follow us on Instagram if you want to find out where Doug is every Tuesday. You can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. And if you're not a white man, email us and say, hey, I'll write for this site.
White men do not apply. It's called reverse racism. Look
Which
it up.
Which is actually, I believe, just racism, right?
It's just reverse sexism if you think about it. You potato eater. It's a mixed bag. It's an Irish person's bag. That's my point. Listen, I'm going to double click my mouse, and it is K-O-P-F.
All right, good.
It means head.
Thank goodness. We almost made it through this whole episode, and I didn't have a title for the show. So way to make your weird German Dudikoff joke. But thank you very much for doing this episode, Doug. It's always fun
to talk about
Pizza Hut with you. Thank you,
I think
guys.
People appreciate my cheese and the crust jokes.
they do. Thank you guys very much for listening. Happy Junesploitation. We will be back next week with an episode on Jurassic World. Douglas, take us out.
Double click my mouth.
Thanks for listening to F This Movie.